from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, at least 17 people have died and some 43 remain unaccounted for after heavy rain on charred land caused massive mudslides in Santa Barbara County. We get the latest on the disaster and look at how burned areas of the North Bay can avoid a similar catastrophe. Then at 9:30, in an extraordinary exchange with lawmakers yesterday, President Donald Trump questioned why the U.S. would accept more immigrants from Haiti and from, quote, shithole countries in Africa rather than places like Norway. We look at the fallout and get your reactions. Next on Forum, join us. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Santa Barbara County officials say up to 43 people remain unaccounted for following the massive mudslide Tuesday that killed at least 17, including four children. Today, rescue crews continue to search for survivors amid the destruction in Montecito, desperate to save lives. We're joined this hour by Laura Sullivan Green. She is Associate Professor and Department Chair in Civil and Environmental Engineering at San Jose State University. Good morning, Laura Sullivan Green.
Good morning.
And we're also joined by Catherine Barnes. She's a producer at KCRW in Santa Barbara who's been following this story. Hello, Catherine Barnes.
Hi, Mina. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. The names of the 17 confirmed dead were released yesterday. What can you tell us about them?
Yeah, so there's 17 confirmed deaths so far. They range in age from 3 years old to 89 years old. And we're still getting information about these people. I know that one of them, Rebecca Riskin, she was 61. She is survived by her children and her husband. She was a real estate agent. Roy Reuter, 84 years old. He was the founder of a Catholic academy called the St. Augustine Academy in Ventura. His wife was also swept away, but she did survive. As you said, there's four children who are under the age of 12. So very sobering details, and all of these people were Montecito residents.
They were Montecito residents. Montecito is known as a fairly wealthy community, but would you say that the among the dead is largely an upper-class group?
It's hard to say. Yes, Montecito is a wealthy community. It's expensive to live there. It's expensive to build a house there, expensive to buy land there. But there are also renters in Montecito, so not necessarily homeowners. And even though, you know, it's a wealthy class, it's a lot of working families. So maybe someone's a doctor or a professor. But they chose Montecito because they could afford it, and they wanted their kids to go to good schools and live in a community that's as beautiful as Montecito, which is, it's right on the coast. It's gorgeous, incredible hiking, good schools. So I think it's safe to say that, yes, you know, probably a lot of these people were in the upper class, but very hardworking citizens and potentially, you know, renters that were middle class.
Yes, and the number of missing has jumped dramatically. Why is that? Yesterday we were seeing that the number had dropped to as low as 8.
Well, actually, the number that came out this morning at 7 during the briefing was 5 now.
Oh.
So as you said, the numbers have fluctuated. They started with 17, I believe, on Wednesday. Then yesterday we were hearing 48 in the morning. That quickly got changed to 8, and then 43 was the number yesterday afternoon. This morning it's 5 missing. And we were talking with Amber Anderson from the Santa Barbara City Fire Department, and she was saying that, you know, these numbers are fluctuating so much because they're getting reports of missing people from all over the place. They're getting calls into their dispatch center. They're looking at social media posts. They're looking at missing persons reports that are posted physically at the Red Cross shelters. So they're compiling all these names. They're verifying that these people are indeed missing. And then they're verifying that if they are missing, that they were part of this incident in Montecito. So that's why these numbers are going up and down and up and down. And I expect that to continue for at least a couple more days.
Oh, I see. Well, I'm glad to hear at least that right now it's at 5. You talked about how it's how Montecito is such a beautiful coastal community. You were there, though, on Tuesday. Can you tell us what it looked like?
Yeah, I actually live, I rent an apartment in Montecito on the western end of Montecito. So I was not in an evacuation warning or order zone, but I woke up about half a mile away from some awful destruction on Tuesday morning and was able to drive to one of the road closures and get out of my car. And that was by a road called Hot Springs Road, which was in a voluntary evacuation zone, but that was one of the places that got hit the hardest. And I parked my car. I saw a group of search and rescue volunteers who were just washing their rain gear off, ready to go to another address where there was a report of people who needed saving. And I walked with them around the corner to the closed road and down that street. And I walked with them until the shoes I was wearing, I just couldn't walk in this mud. And it looked apocalyptic. When I looked up after the interview, I was just in awe because it's right near my house. And it was down power lines, huge, huge boulders the size of cars in the middle of the road, bulldozers trying to move those so that county fire trucks and state fire trucks could get through. Several houses completely destroyed. There was one house specifically I remember seeing where they had solar panels on their roof, but it was completely obliterated to the point where the solar panels were just sitting in the mud. So just a really wild scene.
Yes, and you can tell me if these numbers are correct, that it's nearly 60 or so homes that were destroyed and about 450 that were damaged.
That sounds accurate. The number I have is that over 500 homes were either destroyed or damaged. And again, they're starting to tally that. But right now it's so much still in the search and rescue phase that I don't think anyone is focused on tallying how many homes have been destroyed at this point.
And do people have power? How many people are without electricity and running water? Do you?
I have all of those things, but most of Montecito does not have power, so therefore they don't have internet, they don't have cable, they don't have running water. The storm took out a lot of the Montecito Water District's infrastructure, so people are not able to get water in that area. Again, electricity is down. And the same is true for Summerland as well, which is the town just east of Montecito. They were not as affected physically, but they are still without internet and cable. And they've been trapped for a while because the 101 has been closed, and they couldn't get south to Carpinteria or north to Santa Barbara. And they were, relying on the radio, basically, because they couldn't get any other kind of news.
We're getting the latest on the mudslide disaster in Santa Barbara County, and I'd like to invite you, our listeners, to join the conversation. This is a half-hour segment, so if you have questions, give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. You can email us at forum@kqed.org or post your comments on Facebook and Twitter. Laura Sullivan Green, we've been hearing that mudslides can continue to happen after rains, of course. Is there any threat here of hillside slippage still, or are they pretty much out of the woods in Santa Barbara?
They are not out of the woods. With rain events up to 2 years after a significant fire like we saw in Santa Barbara and Ventura counties, they can be at risk up to 2 years afterwards.
And there are, of course, a lot of concerns about the burn scar areas here in Northern California after the massive wildfires we had in October. How would you compare the situation here against what we're seeing in Santa Barbara?
One of the greatest advantages that Napa and Sonoma County has had is time. they have had time to improve drainage in the burn areas, to put erosion measures in place like berms and sandbags, and also to start planting vegetation to help reduce the likelihood of these events happening. But they are at risk as well.
Can you give us a sense, Catherine Barnes, just of the scale of the operation that's underway in terms of the cleanup? There was talk that there are still some, you know, proportion of the area that rescue crews have not been able to reach. Where are they at right now? What are they doing?
Right now, there's over 1,500 people working on the incident. Yesterday evening, they actually turned the whole, almost all of Montecito into an evacuation order zone, meaning even people who were sheltering in place at their house needed to leave just so that emergency personnel were the only ones in that zone and were not distracted by media, by residents who were, you know, safe in the area. And so I think that shows you how much they're focused really right now on search and rescue still. And, you know, even those who have died, retrieving those bodies, finding them under layers of debris and mud. So in terms of thinking forward for the next rainfall, I don't think officials are really there yet. But I did speak with an earth scientist at UCSB yesterday, and he said that, you know, flooding is a real issue the next time there is rain. But he did say that most of the debris may have been washed out during this freakish 5 to 15 minutes of intense rain. So most of the loose material probably got washed down. Although I also have heard reports of debris being held on certain banks so that the next rainfall, those could start moving.
Laura Sullivan Green, do you have a sense of whether or not that they are likely to find people alive at this point?
I really can't speak to that. It's very dependent on exactly what the nature of the area is.
Yes, and whether they were able to find some pocket of shelter where they could survive.
Correct.
You know, there was a lot of questions. There were a lot of questions, Catherine Barnes, around why Santa Barbara County officials chose not to send emergency alerts to cell phones and that they began as the mudslides were occurring. What can you tell us about what officials are saying about their rationale?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest issue that people are dealing with right now. With all of these deaths, everyone's, you know, wants to know, could this have been prevented? And, you know, it's hard to say, but I will tell you that, you know, living in that area, I got a notification on my cell phone. I'm signed up for the county's emergency alert system, which many people are, but I'd say the large percentage of people are not. So I got an alert on Sunday telling people about the mandatory and voluntary evacuation orders. But again, that was anyone who was only signed up for the emergency notification system. So many people didn't get that. I heard that some people got some National Weather Service alerts sent that were, but they said they were sent to all cell phones, but I did not receive one of those. And then the alert that was sent to all cell phones was not until Tuesday around 2:47 a.m. And at that point, it was far too late for anyone to get out. So that I think that text just said shelter in place.
Mm. Yes, what you're describing is similar to conversations that have happened here in Northern California after the fires about whether or not people were notified. You know, as you know, more than 40 people died here when the fires came through Northern California. And some residents said they got little or no warning. And so there is a debate going on, of course, about how best to warn the public when something like this is going on. Well, we've got some calls coming in, and I'd like to go to them now. I'll start with Kathleen in Martinez. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. What is the risk from the solar panels to the individual and to first responders and to the environment immediately in the short and the long term?
Laura Sullivan Green, can you speak to that?
I can speak to just in general debris. As that debris moves, if the ground becomes unstable, anybody around it may be impacted by it. The great thing is that many first responders are well trained in recognizing when instability occurs, and they tend to leave the area before the risk gets too great.
Kathleen, does that answer your question?
In part. The other part is whether or not there's any electrical stuff that's involved, or whether there's any chemical or other types of things that could be people could be exposed to, or that kind of thing in the short and the long term, individually and especially to first responders who might be then involved with that a little bit more closely as time goes on.
Kathleen, thanks. Chemicals, Laura Sullivan?
I'm just not familiar enough with the composition of solar panels to make any kind of effective response to that.
Well, Kathleen, thanks for your question.
Thank you. Maybe at some point you could have somebody on who might. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your question. Catherine Barnes, the other question around sort of emergency notification was that there was concern that in some of the most damaged areas, the people were given voluntary alerts. Did you hear that as voluntary evacuation orders as opposed to mandatory evacuation orders? Did you hear that as well?
Yeah. I think that's the top story right now. Basically, when they put in place these evacuation warnings and orders on Sunday night, they sent out a map, and it looked a lot like the map during the Thomas Fire. Basically, Montecito, Summerland, and Carpinteria, if you could picture them, if you cut a line in half, split those three places in half, the top half of residents who live closer to the mountains were within an evacuation order zone, meaning they needed to leave. Those who lived on the bottom half, closer to Highway 101 and the coast, they were within a voluntary evacuation warning. And because of that, and because they had just left for weeks due to the Thomas Fire, I think a lot of people in the voluntary zone took that warning to mean be ready, have your stuff ready to go, but you don't necessarily need to leave yet. And by the time things changed, it was just way too late for them to leave. I mean, we've, you know, talked to people who woke up to the rain, opened their door, and saw just a wall of mud coming to their house. So they couldn't even get into their car. And anyone who tried to was immediately started to be swept away. We talked to one woman who was in her car, and the car got moved towards a tree. So she opened up her car window and climbed up the tree to safety. Mm. So as you said, a lot of these people were in voluntary zones, and I think a lot of people are angry that this wasn't expanded to an order way back on Sunday or Monday. But it's hard because weather is unpredictable. Weather officials said there's no way of knowing that half an inch of rain was going to pour in 5 minutes, nearly 1 inch in 15 minutes.
Again, Catherine Barnes is a producer at KCRW in Santa Barbara and a resident of Montecito. Laura Sullivan Green is also with us. She's an associate professor and department chair in civil and environmental engineering at San Jose State University. And you, our listeners, are with us. The number to call, 866-733-6786. The email address, forum@kqed.org. You can post comments on our website, kqed.org/forum, on Facebook and on Twitter, @KQED Forum. Laura Sullivan Green, why is it so hard to predict where these mudslides will go?
On one hand, we know that the region is at risk of landslides and mudslides. But just as Catherine said, there is very little ability to pinpoint the exact areas where the slides may occur, just as it's very hard to predict the exact locations where these intense bursts of rain are going to occur.
And the speed with which the mud travels, I think people think of mud as traveling slowly, but is that the case in these situations? Or is it as fast as almost running water?
These slides can travel as fast as about 35 miles an hour because you have a lot of water in mixed in with that soil and mud. And when it is traveling downhill, it picks up momentum and they can move very quickly.
Well, thank you for that. Let's go to some more callers. Ed in Kentfield. Hi, Ed.
Hi, how are you today?
Great. What's on your mind?
Well, for about 4 or 5 years, I ran one of these emergency notification businesses. We had many counties, neither Santa Barbara or Marin, but say San Bernardino, San Diego, and others. And one of the challenges is the big transition from landlines to cell phones. So there is a system by which all landlines can be notified. There's a reverse 911, it's commonly called, where it's a FCC regulated that you can make all these calls in case of emergency. There's nothing like that for cell phones. So unless people opt in, they're not going to get notified. The other challenge there is this is a completely different system than the national notification system, which trickles down to the state, which is really limited to things like Amber Alerts, weather alerts, and news alerts. And so it's no single way of getting the message out.
Yes, what you're hitting on are some of the conversations that right now people, emergency responders, lawmakers, everyone is having in terms of how to address our emergency notification system and deal with both the advantages and the limitations of the technology we currently have. Well, thanks for sharing that. Neely writes, why does it matter whether or not the people affected by the mudslides are upper class or middle or lower? It was one of the questions asked, and I find it perplexing. Thanks, Neely, for the question. I actually asked that because my understanding was that there is a lot of assumption that people in Montecito were wealthy and that most of the people who died are, but that there are a lot of workers, landscapers, housekeepers, potentially among the dead, and renters. And so I just wanted to get a sense of whether or not we were aware of the full scope of who may have been hurt or killed in this particular mudslide. Jen in Santa Barbara, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Hi, so I just was calling, you know, all of the concern on the ground in coffee shops, everyone's conversation, that we're not hearing as much on the news that we would like to about, for example, the Biltmore Hotel, other areas where, you know, we're hearing about the very specific Romero Canyon, we're hearing, you know, certain counts of the missing. But it seems that there are stories coming off the ground that some of these larger areas that would have housed people aren't being reported. Is there anything that you're hearing there on the ground that we're not getting in some of the top headlines?
Catherine Barnes?
Well, concerning the Biltmore Hotel, I believe that they were still closed due to cleanup from the Thomas Fire and evacuations in that area. I don't think that they had opened yet for guests, so I believe that nobody was there during this mudslide. I also think that they were just a bit to the east side of most of the damage that occurred. So I haven't, you know, heard too much about the Biltmore. I know that Coast Village Road, which is the main street in downtown Montecito, did get hit hard. I know that there is the Montecito Inn in that area, and they were estimating, I think, about 80 feet of mud in the parking structure below that hotel, which I guess in a way is a good thing because it meant that the mud had somewhere to go underground. But now they're sifting through all of that mud and cleaning that up. So in terms of the larger areas where people might have been sleeping or living in Montecito, that's what I know.
Laura Sullivan Green, this is a question that's probably best for you. Barbara asks, is there anything that might be instituted to prevent this from happening in the future in regards to construction code zoning?
As people move to these areas that are, they sort of call it the edge between urban and rural, you're putting people in areas that are more prone to these type of incidents. As far as preventing people from living in areas that are at risk, that's a very difficult thing to do.
Yes. I wonder, though, quickly, we have about 10 seconds left, if you can tell us what people can do to help their properties be ready in case of a mudslide.
Have good drainage, sandbag where necessary, and be aware of your surroundings. Evacuate if asked to do so.
Laura Sullivan Green, she's associate professor and department chair in civil and environmental engineering at San Jose State. Catherine Barnes is a producer at KCRW in Santa Barbara. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Another half-hour forum is coming up next. Stay with us. I'm Mina Kim.